But I think the correct, you're supposed to, I think the preferred method would be to have the donor feces inserted directly into your anus, as opposed to through a fine threaded tube through your nose. I will, you know, that's a little much, don't you think? Anything to stay healthy, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear about the arrangement that the city of New York has with Goldman Sachs to profit off of jailed youth?
No.
Goldman Sachs would provide a loan of nearly $10 million to pay for a program intended to reduce the rate at which adolescent men incarcerated at Rikers Island reoffend after their release. The city of New York was short on money, so Goldman Sachs stepped in to do what anemic public investment could not accomplish on its own: keep young men out of jail. If the program succeeded, the giant bank would make a profit. The more recidivism dropped, the more taxpayers would have to pay Goldman Sachs. On the other hand, if recidivism didn't drop significantly, Goldman would lose its investment. So far, it's too early to tell whether or not the program, which focuses on cognitive behavioral therapy, will meet its goals. But according to the report from the Department of Corrections, fighting has already been reduced at Rikers, so Goldman may just cash in. The Rikers experiment is an example of a new trend in what is being called social impact bonds. The burning question about who profits and who loses in these schemes have become the subject of debate as the trend catches hold. A social impact bond, also known as pay-for-success bonds, are billed as an innovative way of linking private investors, nonprofits, and government to deliver social services with demonstrable outcomes. Private financiers or foundations pay for the cost of a new program, and the government later repays the investors, often with a bonus if the program accomplishes its goals. While social impact bonds are still a fairly new concept, the first such bond was launched in the UK back in 2010. The New York Times reported that in 2011, the term was one of the top 10 philanthropic buzzwords. Advocates say that problems like homelessness, juvenile delinquency, preventative health care can be improved through these bonds, and claim that they will save government money. Big players like McKinsey, Goldman Sachs, and the Rockefeller Foundation are getting into the game, boasting that such innovative financing schemes are a big win for everybody. President Obama has expressed enthusiasm for the concept, and the Center for American Progress, the Democratic Party affiliated think tank, has released research supporting the idea. There's a long, nasty list of innovative schemes pushed by Wall Street and build as ways to save money for the government that have drained away city and state coffers. Big banks have hauled in boatloads of money from their flawed and even fraudulent schemes directed at public funding, such as financial contraptions and deals involving complex derivatives that were supposed to help government pay for things like bridges and waterworks, etc. And as you might imagine, these products didn't often work as the banks advertised. In the case of social impact bonds, a government must budget money to pay for the private financier or foundation for the program. If the program doesn't work, the government doesn't owe anything, and the money could be loaned, and the money loaned would be considered a charitable donation. But if it's successful, the taxpayer, through the government, is forced to not only pay back the loan, but to pay for profits of the investor. Some people object to the idea of a private profit provided by taxpayer dollars. While the programs themselves might be helpful in some cases, the problem is that companies like Goldman Sachs are profiting from them at the expense of taxpayers. An example of Head Start, which 57,000 children have lost as a result of tax cuts and the sequester, have been one of the victims of the misdirection of fund appropriation. Goldman Sachs has leapt into the breach, launching a social impact investment to provide private money as an alternative to public investments in early childhood education. Head Start saves the government at least $7 for every dollar spent, but if Goldman Sachs has its way, we will be paying them and their clients part of the savings for having replaced taxpayer funding for such programs. Private profit crowding out as public good, or what some critics are calling this. This is precisely the sort of thing conservatives who worship the market and hate the government want, an excuse to reduce taxes for the wealthy while cutting services for everybody else. It's really just a return to the 19th century model of charitable contributions for the poor instead of government intervention and public investment, which I don't know if that's necessarily the worst thing in the world. Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Blankfein, I mean, think about that. The 19th century model of charitable contributions for the poor instead of government intervention and public investment. I mean, in the three generations that the government has been heavily invested in neutralizing poverty in this country, poverty has just continued to grow. And that might not totally be the fault of welfare programs and the Great Society of LBJ, because certainly corporate power and control has increased and become probably the greatest engine for social and economic inequality and the evaporation of the middle class in this country. It's a few minutes after the hour of two right here on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. So it might not all be the fault of the Great Society and LBJ's war on poverty. But you go back to the 19th century and you still had the same issues with corporate control, and you had the rise of the American Empire, etc., towards the end of the 19th century. And you had lots of poverty and social inequality, but there's something about the welfare state that allows people to ignore the social problems that exist in their very, you know, realities. You don't have to drive that far from the murder zip code to be in Mission Hills here in Kansas City. But back to this idea of Goldman Sachs investing in preventing reoffending criminals who are being released from custody, Rikers Island, from not being another statistic of recidivism. Goldman Sachs, one of the country's most profitable companies, has also been named one of the top tax deadbeats in the USA. A recent study by Citizens for Tax Justice shows that one of the biggest tax breaks claimed by corporations is stock options for top executives, which are deductible from corporate tax but don't reduce earnings reported to stockholders. Between 2008 and 2012, Goldman Sachs claimed over $1.5 billion in deductions from stock options. All this tax dodging, of course, is a key reason for the lack of public funds for social programs. That might be partially true. Again, I take issue with that statement as well, because I don't know that there's necessarily a funding problem in regards to government in this country. Certainly not at the federal level. There's plenty of funds. I mean, it's trillions of dollars of money go into the treasury every single year. You know, and another trillion gets borrowed from the Federal Reserve and a bunch of other creditors every single year. It's not necessarily a funding problem. It's a priorities problem. But I digress. 816-931-5534. 931-KKFI. We'll go back to the phones. It's just interesting to me is certain things get privatized. I don't know why Goldman Sachs should be involved in preventing recently released prisoners from going back to prison. I don't know that you can have a for-profit venture capital firm doing that. It just seems another way to fleece money from the government by half-assing corporate contracts, corporate government no-bid contract stuff, and then privatizing something that maybe can't be done for profit, can only effectively be done non-for-profit. I would imagine the most effective programs for keeping people out of prison who have gone to prison have everything to do with job placement, I would imagine. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. Maybe we should give some of these ex-cons from Rikers Island positions at Goldman Sachs. And Goldman Sachs could work on their street game. They could hustle a little bit more. 816-931-5534. That's 931-KKFI. The same thing with Pennsylvania and those for-profit prisons. They're putting all those kids at. Juvenile courts, yep. Drug court, for-profit. You had two judges in Pennsylvania get disbarred, or not disbarred, but removed from the bench. I'm sure they were disbarred as well. Removed from the bench because they were receiving kickbacks for sending kids who should not have gone to these juvenile boot camps and various other, you know, kid prison gangs or whatever they are, chain gangs, not prison gangs. Prison gangs are there, but I meant to say chain gangs. It just seems wrong. You know why it seems wrong? Because it is. So there was a story in the Kansas City Star about how Kansas City's violent crimes are clustered in one area. And it's a 34-square-mile area. 75% of the homicides, 71% of aggravated assaults, 74% of robberies, and 62% of rapes occurred in that 34-square-mile area. Now, it's pretty interesting. The area is south of the Missouri River to about 85th Street, with Bruce R. Watkins, or Highway 71, running through the center. It includes the Old Northeast, downtown, Oak Park and Blue Hills neighborhoods. I'm not sure where Oak Park is, but Blue Hills is, you know, essentially Paseo from, I mean, like, you know, Troost, east by Rockhurst, all the way south to Meyer. River Market, the Country Club Plaza, Midtown, and Westport. Essentially where we live, Jesse. Essentially where I spend all my time and where I do everything. That's the 34-square-mile area and the part of Kansas City that everyone likes. You know, I mean, they don't include the Northland in here because, you know what? It's probably a lot safer up there, but nobody likes it up there.
I like it up there.
Yeah, do you?
I want to live in Platte County.
You want to live in Platte County? I don't think you can afford...
North Platte County.
I don't think you can afford the retainer.
Okay, let me rephrase that. I want to squat in Platte County.
I just think you would have some issues with the law if you moved up there.
You're probably right.
Another map displaying homicides since 2001 fills the same asymmetrical 34-square-mile area with red dots, revealing a few bald spots around the shopping and downtown areas, but consistent and concentrated violence elsewhere. For 13 years, this area has been home to an average of 79% of the city's killings. And it's literally from the Missouri River south to 85th Street, with 71 Highway running right through the middle, including Westport, the Plaza, downtown, and City Market.
I-49?
It doesn't become I-49 until you get on the other side of the Grandview Triangle. Have you noticed that?
Mm-hmm. After Belton.
No, no, not after Belton, just on the other side of the triangle. Then they start calling it I-49. But it's very interesting. So you read this article, and there's all this, you know, talk about what they're going to do. I mean, Daryl Forte was just in Israel learning how to, I guess, have an apartheid paramilitary police force. Why was the chief of the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department in Israel tweeting pictures of guard towers and Israeli military? What was he doing over there? That's apparently a very common thing for American police chiefs and representatives of American law enforcement to go over to Israel and hang out with their military and learn how it's done in the Holy Land.
That's the new thing.
That seems a little extreme. I mean, do we really think that the situation on the ground in Palestine is similar to the situation on the ground on the east side of Kansas City? And that if we were to build some walls and start bulldozing people's houses and burning down their olive trees, that we would somehow make a better, kinder, better, gentler place here? I mean, is that the what's the end game here exactly? And then I realized towards the end of this article what the end game is, because there's all this talk. Instead of sending officers out into the 34 square miles and having them drive around blind, we could say, here's a person based on their behavior that you need to take a look at and keep an eye on. Analysts are trying to predict who could become criminals and victims by researching things such as who's been a suspect, victim, or witness in a shooting or other violent crime case in the past 5 years. People with multiple hits are likely to be involved in future crimes, says Major Mike Corwin with the KCPD, who's the overseer of the center. Analysts can relay information about those people, their friends, and their vehicles to patrol officers and enforcement squads. Most police departments do not combine analysis and intelligence, Mike Corwin said. Crime analysis is the what, he said. Intelligence analysis is the why and the who. The new efforts to build on some of Chief Forte's earlier moves include creating a victim assistance unit and saturating 4 hotspots of violent crime covering 13 square miles with extra op. I mean, you can do all this stuff. Put more cops out there. You could try to make the snitches more comfortable, you know, so they don't have to worry about ending up in ditches like bitches the way the snitches are supposed to, or whatever the people on the bus say. You can do all these things if you want. But the real problem with the crime, we're talking about no future for these people. I mean, you can tell, you can target who's going to be a future criminal because they don't have a job. They didn't graduate high school. They certainly aren't doing any other higher education because they didn't even complete the lower education. There's completely no foreseeable economic future for these people because it's the nature of the changing American economy, or the changed American economy, I guess I should say. And the only way to reverse, you know, these issues of crime in this 34 square mile corridor of Kansas City would be forced abortions for the poor. I know that sounds like no fun, and I sound like a total dick when I say it, but it's mostly true.
Dick.
But here towards the end of the article is where it really comes forth. I mean, it's the same thing with the drug problem. You can put more officers on the street. You can take them out of their squad cars. You can have them walking around, handing out baseball cards and talking with the community. Everyone can sing kumbaya, but when the community has no recognizable future, when the community is not invested in itself because it does not own its own home or its own neighborhood. And there's no future, so there's no investment there. There's no reason to preserve something that's not yours. I mean, that would be, and I don't know that the government of Kansas City, the police department of Kansas City, can help people feel like they're the owners of their community. I don't know that that's possible. Or provide a future for the people of these economically and demographically depressed areas of our city. I don't know if that's possible. So then the solution becomes, as Chief Forte said, quoted here in this Kansas City Star article, that he would like to boost technology. He talked to the mayor last week about finding money to add high-resolution cameras to a gun detection system called the Shot Spotter that covers the 3.55 square mile area. And he'd also like to do what New York has done and add stationary license plate readers in hotspots to get information on getaway vehicles after crimes. As it stands, the department has 14 readers attached to patrol cars that roam the city. You can see some of these KCPD cruisers that have, I believe it's four, they look like cameras on the trunk of their car that are all kind of pointed in different angles. And what those are license plate scanners. They are cameras that can read a license plate. They feed that license plate into a database. They look for warrants. They look for expired tags. They look for no insurance. They look for anything they can find. And the police, by the way, are not the only people with these.
No.
There are also private individuals with these that are working for repo companies and God knows what else, out there collecting data and information on people on the highways. But it's interesting to me that the underlying causes, I mean, we can have all the shot spotting technology available. We can have high resolution cameras observing everything that's going on. We can have license plate scanners reading who's going into what part of town.
But we can't find a plane.
Well, we can't find a plane. We could do all this stuff, but it's not going to reverse. It's not going to reverse any of these trends, ultimately. Because the police department, law enforcement, really is there to respond to crimes and fill out paperwork for insurance purposes. And that's not a slam on the police department. I think police officers realize that as well. I mean, from time to time, I'm sure a cop prevents a crime. But for the most part, they are responding to crimes. And triaging, insane and crazy situations, dealing with people who are crazy for either environmental or drug-induced reasons. The foundation of all these plans is building trust in the community, according to the Star article, especially those areas hardest hit by crime, like the 34 square miles peppered with red dots in the urban core. Trust is a huge factor in reducing crime. Without trust, we have nothing. And to that, the mayor agreed. But it's just like gun violence. When the city of Kansas City talks about reducing gun violence, how they've done everything they can to do that. I mean, the reality here is that people turn to all these things because they don't have an economic future. Provide people that, problem solved. It's 23 minutes after the hour of 2, and the government, by the way, probably won't be able to do that. 23 minutes after the 2 right here on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Benjamin. We'll be back with you after this message.
Did you know that you can donate your unwanted car, boat, truck, or motorcycle to KKFI Radio and get a tax deduction for your donation? Find out more by calling KKFI at 816-931-3122. This is Pat Fisher from Kansas City, a volunteer for 90.1 FM KKFI, our community radio station.
I want your arms around me. Just be thankful for what you got. Though you may not drive a great big Cadillac, diamond in the back, sunroof top, digging the scene with a gangster lean, gangster white walls, TV and television in the back. Just be thankful for what you got. Diamond in the back, sunroof top, digging the scene with a gangster lean. Diamond in the back, sunroof top, digging the scene with a gangster lean. Down in the back.
Little Equinox. I played that one late. Usually try to play that one around the Equinox, but it's hell. Today's the first day of it's Monday, the 31st of
Baseball
March.
Baseball season.
Baseball season begins. That's right. And tomorrow, it's the first day of April. Today felt like the first day of spring. It actually, spring had sprung. It was one of those perfect days, too, where it wasn't. It was in the 70s, but it wasn't hot.
So tomorrow, Tuesday, is the first? Or tomorrow is in today, Monday is the first?
Tuesday is the first day of April.
Yeah, gotcha.
Today's the first day of baseball. Spring has sprung. It finally has arrived. Here's a story that's near and dear to your heart, Jesse. Another J.P. Morgan employee has died an unnatural death.
It happens.
This is unnatural death number 5 at J.P. Morgan Chase since the first of the year, and unnatural death number 13 in the financial industry. Now, the author of this article doesn't see a connection to all these deaths, but they do keep on coming. A 56-year-old Dublin, Ohio man was killed on Saturday when he was struck by a car in Miami County. Joseph Giampapa was riding alone on his bicycle on Troy Sydney Road when he was struck by a car. The driver of the car called 911. Sheriff deputies responded. The bicyclist was pronounced dead at the scene.
And I'm sorry, I didn't hear. Where was this?
Ohio. The Joseph Giampapa was an accomplished cyclist, a responsible cyclist, and that's what makes this tragedy so mind-numbing, said Jeff Stevens, a friend of Giampapa. The road that Joe was on was flat, no trees, just wide-open visibility. According to IntelliHub, the string of unnatural deaths include William Brokesmith, a 58-year-old former senior executive at Deutsche Bank, who was found dead in his home after an apparent suicide in central London back on January 26th. Carl Slime of Tata Motors, managing director Carl Slime, was found dead on the fourth floor of the Shangri-La Hotel in Bangkok on January 27th. Gabrielle McGee, a 39-year-old employee of J.P. Morgan, died after falling from the roof of the J.P. Morgan European headquarters in London on January 27th. Mike Duecker, a 50-year-old chief economist of a U.S. investment bank, was found dead close. He was found dead close to the Tacoma Narrows Bridge in Washington State. Richard Talley, the 57-year-old founder of American Title Services in Centennial, Colorado, was found dead earlier this month after apparently shooting himself with a nail gun. Tim Dickerson, a UK-based communications director at Swiss Re AG, also died last month with unknown circumstances surrounding his death. Ryan Henry Crane, a 37-year-old executive at J.P. Morgan, died in an alleged suicide just a few weeks ago. No details have been released. A 33-year-old banker in Hong Kong named Lee Junji.
I read about that guy.
Jumped from the J.P. Morgan headquarters in Hong Kong this last week. James Stewart Jr., former National Bank of Commerce CEO, dies suddenly in Arizona with no explanation. Autumn Radke, a 28-year-old American chief executive of the Singapore-based currency company First Media, died mysteriously of an apparent suicide. Edmund Riley, a 47, a trader at Manhattan's Vertical Group, jumped in front of a LIRR train, that would be Long Island Railroad train, at 6 a.m. He was pushed in front of the train by Frank Underwood.
Yeah.
Kenneth Belando, a 28-year-old J.P. Morgan investment banker, was found dead on March 12th after reportedly jumping from the roof of his apartment. And then, of course, Joe Giampapa, a J.P. Morgan bankruptcy attorney, was killed when his bike was struck by a minivan.
So what do you think it is, Ben? I think it's either somebody's killing bankers or there's some rumblings going down.
Well, maybe the bankers are finally realizing that their lives are based upon lies. It's a life of lies and corruption and deceit. And they just can't emotionally, morally, ethically take themselves anymore. Can't stand to look themselves in the mirror. No, I don't know. It's just interesting because there have been a lot of these stories. I mean, I understand. I mean, the chief executive of the Singapore-based virtual currency company First Media, and by virtual currency company, they mean Bitcoin exchange.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, that makes sense. Bitcoin people committing suicide, a bunch of JP Morganeers jumping off buildings. I mean, like it's the eve of the Great Depression again, or
that's
something
like that.
That's what
I'm saying. Like, there's something going that we don't know about, or
maybe it really just sucks that much to be a banker.
That could be it.
I don't know that that's actually it, but that could be it. No, that's absolutely right. Well, that's the whole point. It's hard to, you know, start connecting dots when you don't have them yet.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to why all these people are killing themselves. What could possibly, you know, that, and that's the whole point. What within the financial world could come out that would be that groundbreaking or earth-shattering or whatever? I mean, at this point, with everything that has happened in the financial industry, what could it possibly be? Yeah, I mean, do you see what I'm saying? Between everything that's happened since the Great Manic Depression of 2008 until question marks that we are in the middle of right now, I mean, what level of duplicitous corruption could cause people to kill themselves out of embarrassment? Like these are like, you know, honor killings. Like, these are Japanese businessmen falling on the sword to save face and, you know, maintain their family's pride or something like that. I mean, that's not what's taking place here. I mean, what could it possibly be? I mean, JP Morgan has already paid how much money to the United States government in various fines levied upon them because of corrupt business practice based upon the whole mortgage thing and the derivatives and credit default swaps and all that. I mean, what could it possibly be? There can't be anything that's that bad that the financial sector has done that we don't know about yet that could cause people to kill themselves, right? Commit suicide.
Unknown knowns.
I mean, what could it be? I mean, what could we find out? It's like, you know, that, I mean, JP Morgan, you know, they're heavily invested in pedophilia or something like that. I mean, what could the worst thing, worst case scenario possibly be? Haven't we already done the worst case scenario?
Oh, I doubt it. No way.
You don't think so?
No. Has life changed for us that drastically? I mean, all the worst thing that's happened, you know, since we graduated high school, we've always been able to get gas and cheeseburgers.
Right? I just meant as far as the American financial system is concerned. I mean, and no, right, the worst case scenario in regards to our situation, you're right. You can buy gas, you can buy cheeseburgers. It could get a lot worse. But at that point, when the gas station and McDonald's was shut down, I don't think that whatever the executives at JP Morgan Chase did would matter at all at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just kind of my feeling. I don't know that it makes a lot of sense. And maybe there is something to this. Maybe there's just something to the simple fact that, you know, these jobs are real stressful. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say. And in regards to, the New York Times had an interesting article about how anti-anxiety drugs are tied to higher mortality. I mean, everyone that takes Xanax will die. I mean, that is true, right?
Mm-hmm.
Someday, everyone that will. But a large study has linked several common anti-anxiety drugs and sleeping pills to an increased risk of death. For over 7 years, researchers followed 34,000 plus people who filled prescriptions for anti-anxiety medications like Valium and Xanax, or sleep aids like Ambien, Sonata, and Lunesta, comparing them with nearly 70,000 people who did not. After adjusting for a wide variety of factors, the researchers found that people who took the drugs had more than a double risk of death. Now, why I think that's interesting is because stress and anxiety, that is probably one of the greatest, you know, killers of people before their time out there. Being stressed out about your life, your bills, your job, your whatever. And maybe there's a connection with all these bankers killing themselves in stress. I'm, you know, it's a soulless job. I mean, if you're a banker, I mean, what, you know, I mean, you're crunching numbers, you're fleecing innocent people, you're charging exorbitant interest rates. I mean, you are kind of a parasite to a certain degree. A fractional reserve parasite. And then stress just being a huge killer. And then the way we deal with stress is pharmaceutically as opposed to spiritually. And these pharmaceuticals are killing people as well because they do not neutralize the stress. They just suppress or bury the stress. It's very interesting. It's interesting to me. 816-931-5534. In the last few moments before we go to suicide, 307. Right here on Community Radio in the 21st Century. You're on the radio.
Hey there. This is Andy. I just wanted to find out a real quick recap on the numbers you're talking about the J.P. Morgan bankers that were committing suicide or dying. I tuned in a little late, and I was just wondering if you could give me a quick recap on that.
So there's been five